Okay, thanks, Roger, and it's great pleasure to come back to Waterloo and enjoy the cold weather. And so what I'm gonna tell you today is some sort of like a journey that we went through just to explore like what how smart the machine is and how to teach the machine to discover something. And so this work is done mostly by my two students, Kai Wen and Wen Han. So those are the guys who did the hard work and wrote the code and run the models. So this is a brief outline of my talk. So I'll give you a brief introduction of reinforcement learning, which is my talk will be based on. And I'll show you some history or some thoughts that we went through to teach the machine to discover this Monte Carlo updates via reinforcement learning. And I'll show you some results that finally some algorithm we kind of developed, and some of the results, and give you some conclusions, some outlooks. So I started to ask myself this question because I've seen a lot of this AI like talks, and it's been used a lot in physics. But I'm always fascinated by like how much we should tell the machine before it can really discover physics, and I think that that's a goal for the whole like artificial intelligence. So I asked these two questions: how smart is the machine, and is it possible that the machine can figure out physics by itself? I just show the machine some data, and then somehow some theory will come out. That'd be great, then we'll be out of jobs. As Roger is a pioneer in this field, so the application of the machine learning methods in physics, and Huang and Roger did this study, and basically they taught the machine to learn the phase transition, okay, of an Ising model, right? Although we already know what the Ising model transition is, we can do a large scale Monte Carlo simulation to get the TC, but this is still a pioneer work. But what really fascinated me is something called reinforcement learning. So I guess people in this room are already familiar with all these classifications, but let me just rephrase. So we have this supervised learning, basically just a classification, and you feed a machine with a lot of data sets and with labels, and then you expect the machine will be able to do the classification for you. So supervised learning, you don't have a lot of prediction power in the sense that it just tells you if it's a cat or a dog. Okay. But also there's a so-called unsupervised learning. So you have a lot of these generative models, and basically you want to extract some feature from the data set. So the famous examples are this autoencoder, RBM, and the restricted Boltzmann machine, and GAN. So what I'm going to focus today is on this reinforcement learning. So the purest form of reinforcement learning is there's no model, and basically is driven by the rewards. And it's a so-called online learning. So basically, you don't really have a lot of data sets. You sort of like generate the data sets yourself, and the machine try to like explore using the observation and trying to make a decision what to do next. And by this, it learns to achieve some target. And this is a reinforcement learning has its origin in psychology, and this is believe how human learns. So I have a quote here by Alan Turing. So basically what he says that, well, now we want to model a DAO mind so they can do a lot of things, but maybe it's easier just we start with something simpler and we try to train the models that can do what the kids do, and with the proper education then you can then just make it grow into a useful adult. Okay, so let's get our fingers crossed that, this young kid will grow. Okay, probably cannot see, this is Lawrence, this is Roger's son. So hopefully with proper education will grow into a, okay. So I believe many of you have seen this demonstration by this DeepMind, and they use this DeepQ network. Some form of reinforcement learning to let the agent play the Atari games. So let me just. Let me just restart. So basically, for people who doesn't know this, is basically it's just trained on pixels. Yes, the projectors is not good enough, but well, I'll send you the link, but you'll see that after a couple of episodes trainings, and the only information that the machine knows is the score, the reward is the score. And after 600 episodes of training, and then this machine learns this expert move. So basically, the machine doesn't know the concept of this game, doesn't know the concept of this board, doesn't know the concept of this this bricks. And the only thing that he knows is that to maximize the reward, and knows learns to play like an expert. Okay, so that's really fascinated me.
First time meeting her family.
Sorry. So recently people also from DeepMind, they also use reinforcement learning to sort of like teach the robot to how to place the bricks. So for example, you want to put these bricks on top of each other, and if you think about it, it's really hard to write a program just to ask a machine to do this. But by some trial and error, then you kind of can, the robot can sort of learn different ways of putting these bricks, and even like open a box, the top of a box, and then put it inside a box and stack it in different ways. Okay, so to summarize, this is basically the strategy of learning. So this is by learning by playing. So you have this, you have a machine that is an agent. Agent is in some state, and the agent will take an action. For example, if this is a This is the Super Mario, and can go up, left, right, or down, or jump, for example. And so you have a state and take an action, and then you go to a new state. And depends on the your new state, you can get some reward. For example, is you have this gold star, okay, and then you get a huge reward. And by combining this, you have the observation and it's fed back to the agent. And then agent, based on this observation, will make the next move. So in a more abstract way, this is can be modeled by a Markov decision process. Okay? So the Markov decision process is, it has several key things. First, you have a state space. So you have a couple of states you can choose from. So basically, it's describe your environment. And you have another space, it's called action space. So there are several actions you can take. Okay, like in the previous example, you can move up, left, right, down. And there's a transition operator, which is based on your initial the agent state and the action that the agent takes, and the environment transition to another state. Okay? And combined with this, there's a reward. So it depends on what kind of a state action that you, the combination, you get some reward. And it's basically, by tuning this reward, okay, you should be able to train the agent to do something. So, so basically, if the agent finds a best policy, then this Markov decision process, okay, should be very close to a Markov chain a process. So basically, this agent will make the move like deterministically, and then you don't really need a reward. So that's the eventual goal. So if you look at the transition probability from a Markov chain, is that doesn't have the action, is not affected by the action of the agent takes. But for a Markov decision process, you have this action that the agent has to decide what to do. Right? So in a sense, you can think of this Markov decision process as a superset of the Markov chain process. And since we've been using this Markov chain to do Monte Carlo, so our idea is that, is it possible to promote this to a Markov decision process and use that process to help us discover some efficient Monte Carlo updates? Okay. So this is the original idea. So this is, again, reiterate what is done in this reinforcement learning. So we want to train the machine to learn a policy, which is implicit policy we don't really know. But this policy will take a state and an action, or will take a state, and based on this state, the agent will make some decision and take some action and change the environment. And with this new environment, then we get some rewards. And you get a new state, and then the agent will keep doing this, okay? And so the whole process is for the agent is just to maximize the future reward, okay? Okay, I just said that. Okay. So the goal of the reinforcement learning is to find a policy such that you can maximize the sum of future rewards. So this is a little bit tricky. So you can think of if you have a process that maximizes the future reward, can two possibilities. One is that you can have a lot of stepwise reward. So you, along the way, you accumulate this this reward. Or there's a process which is that you don't get many rewards on the way, but there's a huge reward at the end if you achieve it. Okay. And so it's kind of tricky. I mean, the whole difficulty of the reinforcement learning is how to design this as a reward scheme such that machine will achieve this target. So there are several ways of this learning. So there are two major categories. One way is called Q-learning. So it's basically you model the so-called value function using some model or your neural network. So basically that's behind this playing these Atari games. The other way is so-called policy gradient. So basically you sort of just directly optimize for policy. So this is what we will do. Okay. So if any questions about this part? Yep. So this is a introduction to reinforcement learning. And as I said, the whole idea is that can we devise a Markov decision process that can make the machine discover some physics? So one application that we thought of is see if there's a way that we can train the machine to discover an efficient Monte Carlo update. Okay. So for Monte Carlo sampling, let me just take the easiest example. You have an IC model, so if there's some configuration, which is all the spins configuration. And we know that from Boltzmann weight that the probability of each configuration is proportional to this Boltzmann distribution. Okay. So in principle, if your system size is small enough, then you can just do a direct sum and get the Parisian function, and you know everything. But in principle, this is not doable when your system size is huge. So we have to resort to this important sampling. So one famous example of this algorithm for this important sampling, basically this Metropolis Hastings algorithm. So basically the way to do it is like this. So you want to sample all these configurations, but you only want to pick the configuration with high probabilities so that get more weight. So the way to do update is that you propose a new configuration, and then you compute the energy difference, and you accept the new configuration according to this probability. So basically, if the energy is lower, then you accept the new configuration. The energy is higher, then you accept the new configuration according to this probability. Okay. The crucial thing is that this is the simplest way update algorithm that satisfies the so-called detail balance. So the detail balance is that you want to make sure that your stationary distribution, the distribution you generated, is the real distribution. It's a steady state. Okay? So the simplest way to guarantee this is use this so-called detail balance. You want the transition probability from C to C prime times the weight of this configuration is equal to the inverse process. Okay? So this is a requirement for a Monte Carlo update. You won't have some balance, but I just want to remind you that actually detail balance is just it's a sufficient condition, but it's not necessary condition because all you need to generate a stationary distribution is some kind of global balance. So just that that the probability going into one state and out of one state, the sum of a probability going in and out of the one state is zero. So basically, you have a stationary. And the detail balance is the easiest way to satisfy this condition, okay? Because all these arrows are canceled out, okay? But so actually, this is there are some algorithms sort of take advantage of this maximum global balance to have this so-called rejection-free algorithm. So the simplest way to generate a new configuration is basically I just take a spin and flip it. Okay, in this IC model case, and I calculate the energy difference and follow the algorithm. But there's some issues when you have a large system size, and when your temperature is very close to the critical temperature, then if you look at the configuration, you have a lot of these clusters. So basically, it's almost impossible to flip a spin because all the neighboring you have to flip all the neighboring spins together to generate an efficient update. Okay? So this is can be described by this critical slowing down. And basically, what it says is that you need a time scale that scales with the square of your system size by to really update the system. And so basically, you have to flip a lot of spins. And this scaling is really bad, so which means that you cannot really simulate a system, a large size system, very close to the close to a critical temperature. Okay. So this is one case that some efficient update is necessary to tackle this problem. And some Swenson and Wong came up with this update methods. And this is a so-called cluster update. And they map this icing model problem to a percolation type of problem. So they can sort of identify the cluster and they flip it with certain probability. Okay. So for example, if you can identify these clusters, so these bonds are put in with certain probabilities such that satisfy the proper weight of the configuration, and then you identify the cluster, and then you flip them, so you generate a new configuration. Okay. So then this will get a better scaling, so which means that you can sort of beat this critical slowing down problem. And let's come back to some abstract level. So the way we think about Monte Carlo simulation, we can think of you have a state. Right? So your state is your configuration. And you can take some actions. And your action, let's just for now say it's a single spin flip. Depends on your physics. It might be rejected. Okay? And the reason for this rejection is because if your underlying physical distribution this state has a very low probability of like a occurrence. But so this is a problem with your update scheme. It's not so much about this physics. But if you're smart enough, then you can combine this a sequence of these actions such that you can reach another highly probable state. And finding this sequence of actions is kind of like a exploration. Right? So you want to explore by combining a lot of these very low probable moves, and you get a high reward. So that's why we think this might fit into our this reinforcement learning scheme. So initially, I was naive. I didn't know too much about machine learning, and I saw that machines are really smart, much smarter than me. So I asked my question, my student to train a reinforcement learning agent to discover a swan song update. I said, this is just trivial, right? Because we know the physics constraint and it should be able to do it. But we learned the hard lesson. So it's difficult because it's really hard to describe what's the right action for the agent to do. And also there's too many degrees of freedom, not enough constraints. Okay. So it's possible using generative models. Okay, for example, in this paper, Lei Wang sort of proposed this using RBM to discover the Swenson Wong update. Okay. So we realized that, and so we decided we want to start with a simpler model. And this model is so simple that the machine should be able to discover something. So this is what I learned in Waterloo. So this is so-called a square ice model. If you're from the statistical physics side, and it's so-called a six vertex model. And again, Roger is a pioneer of this type of algorithms. So this is called ice model because each vertex in the lattice should satisfy this ice rule. So it'd be two spins pointing into the vertex and two spins pointing out of the vertex. And this model has a macroscopic degeneracy. And the efficient way to update is to come from one ice configuration to another ice configuration is so-called the loop algorithm. So basically, you just start from a vertex and choose one of the two outgoing vertices, and then try to construct a loop. And flip the spins along the way until you come back to your original point. And then you flip all the spins. And it's easy to check that by doing this, you bring the system from one ice configuration to another ice configuration. So basically, this is our goal. Can the machine learn this? So let me just demonstrate what the conventional loop algorithm does. Okay. So unfortunately, we flipped the order, but you'll see. So let's just take this spin. It starts from this spin here. I flip the spin. Okay, so I follow the flip spin, so I have these two incoming spins. Then I can choose one of them to flip. And okay. Then I move to here, and I have two spins I need. I can flip. So I choose to flip either of the spin with 50-50 probability. So I can choose one of them and then flip the spin. Okay, and keep going. So until I go back to the original point, vertex point, and then I have a new configuration. And this is so-called loop update. Okay, so in terms of this state action space, so this is like a in all these configurations, I have a very sharp distribution. So these are the ice configurations, which is the configuration satisfies the ice rule. Okay? And the only way to move from this ice configuration to another ice configuration is by going through this loop updates. Okay, so this is a very constrained space, and we know the results. Okay. So now the question is that how can we teach the machine to find this, okay, without too much cheating? Okay, so again, we want to break up this Markov transition probability into some decision processes such that by combining this, we can converge to something like this. And before I tell you what we really did, and I want to mention this exploration exploitation dilemma. Okay. So basically, this is the biggest issue in reinforcement learning, because you want the machine sort of kind of to explore, but if you give the machine too much freedom, then it will just keep exploring and doesn't really converge to some strategy. Okay, so you also want the machine to have some to get this decision and based on what it saw. Okay, so that's a difficult balance. So how do you tune the ratio of these two? And again, I mean, like what we saw in this loop algorithm case, the best long-term strategy is basically you have a lot of these short-term sacrifices. So if I just keep proposing a single spring flip, you'll be rejected until I get lucky, I get this loop algorithm, or I generate a loop, closed loop, and then I get a lot of reward because I generate a new ice configuration. So the reinforcement learning basically is just how do you do the assign the reward scheme so to make a progress. So again, I was naive. So I just say, design this a very simple reward. I give you an ice configuration. Try whatever you can and generate another ice configuration. And if you are successful, I'll give you a candy. And the machine generates a configuration. It's an ice configuration, okay? But it's exactly the same as the original one, because this is the easiest way that the machine can get a reward. So after trial and error, the machine realized I don't do anything, I can get a reward, and then I just exploit. Okay, so this is the first example that we realized that we have to be very careful that how to assign rewards. Then I say okay, I want you to flip as many spins as possible. And you generate ice configuration. And again, I just say, I'm gonna reward you by how many spins you flip, the configuration change. Okay? Otherwise, I don't give you anything. And the machine is smart. Machine just goes straight line, because this is the way that it can take this advantage. You can flip as many spins as possible, and this is the easiest way that will generate some good ice configuration. And another possibility is that the machine just goes straight line and because we have periodic boundary condition, it's come back. Okay? So that's when we realize this is harder than we think. Okay? So what to do? So, and my student showed me this cartoon. It says, whenever somebody asks me if reinforcement learning works, I tell them it doesn't. And 70% of the time, I'm right. Okay. So that's a hard lesson we learned. RL is difficult and it's very subtle. how you tune all these rewards. So we tried other things. We try to train the machine to know what is the ice configuration. We want to teach the machine what is a loop, because we kind of enforcing, okay, I just keep putting into the domain knowledge and see if the machine can learn. And actually, it's both are very hard, because as you can see, we're working on a very special manifold, and these are the hard constraints. And we realized that machines are not, I mean, all these neural networks are not very good at keeping these hard constraints, which is happens a lot in physics. So what we realized that actually probably easier for human to check if these hard constraints are satisfied than just let the machine just figure out this is a hard constraint. So this is a, sort of like our next strategy. So it's easy for human, or you can program on computer a program to check if the ice rule is violated. But it's extremely difficult to teach the machine this ice rule. This, so at the end, what we decided to do is that we let the agent to generate some update, whatever update pattern. And then the machine has one button that you can decide if I want to apply this update to the configuration. And by applying this update to a configuration, and our program or human can check if this new configuration satisfies the ice rule. And then I give the rewards accordingly. Okay. And this is how it actually works. So basically, the agent, what the agent does is you take an initial state and keep moving the spins. You do a single spin flip and do it sequentially. And the machine has to learn. So now machine has to learn that, okay, if this is a good place to push this update button, if it is good, then we will check if this new state is a ice roll state, satisfies the ice roll. If it is, I give the agent a big reward. If it's not, it's failed, and then restart the episode again. Okay. And so by doing this, the agent does a very simple thing, just do a proposal. But the physics is actually embedded in somewhere else. The agent doesn't really need to know the physics, but the physics should emerge by the agent's action. Okay. So this is how we decide our reward. And since this is a stepwise kind of a problem, and as I said, you stepwise, you don't get a signal, don't get a reward. And finally, you get a big reward. And this is in the RL community, it's a big problem, because it's like a training a kid. If you tell the kid that you have to practice until you get some prize, then a lot of times the kid will just give up. So this is called so-called a no signal problem. Or very low signal problem. So we have to give a stepwise reward, very small. It's not, you cannot overwhelm this global reward, but just sort of like leave a breadcrumb along the way, say, okay, if you do this, I'll give you something, but at the end, there'll be a bigger reward.
Episodal learning? Episodal? Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
There's only one.
So these are the actions that the machine can do. So not only can flip the spins, so this is just like we let the agent draw on a canvas, but depends on the machine can decide when to update, when to apply to the configuration space. Okay? And And we provide the machine some observations. So there's some local information. So basically, what are the neighboring spins are, and what are the energy change after you flip the spin, okay? And what does the configuration change? So this is a cumulative. But there's some global observations. So basically, what kind of a trajectory you've walked through so far? Okay. And our state is basically the combination of these two. This is our network design. So we have two networks. One is sort of process the local observables. We just use a feed-forward. And we use a convolution network for this global observations. And we can basically turn on and off this network. So I can just rely on my local observations, or I can put in the global observation. And by comparison, we realized that we need some global observation, okay, to make this machine realize that the loop is good, okay? I mean, so if I just rely on these local observations, and the machine will exploit this memory, so try to memorize the successful loops, and that's biased the distribution. So this is our training process. Okay. It's hard to see. There's some distribution of the loop length here. And these are the time steps. So initially, the machine will just will quickly realize that the shortest loop you can find is just four spin loop. Okay, so the smallest loop you can find, and it'll keep doing this. Okay, but because we provide this stepwise reward, so there's a probability that the machine will try to explore the outside step, okay? And so there's a sharp rise phase. Okay. And this is a total distribution of the loop size. So when the machine starts to realize that by going like to a larger loop, then he can get additional reward, and then he start the exploration, okay, and then finally converges to some stable policy. Okay, so this is just a histogram of the loop distribution. So at the stage one, the loop sizes are almost the smallest one, but at some point realize that, okay, we can go larger loops, and then start exploration, and then finally converges to some distribution. And we can also look at the learned policy. So for the conventional loop algorithm, for each time step, there's only two spins can be flipped with a 50-50 probability. So this is a 50, this is a 1/2 here. Okay, so this is a red dashed line. And so this is a policy the agent will do. And if you look at each one step, most of the time, you'll try to flip the spins, only two spins with close to 50-50 probability. But you can observe that there are some cases that the machine basically just determine, okay, I just want to go this way. And this is some kind of exploitation that the machine says, okay, I know this is a good policy, I just keep doing this. Okay. But one cool thing is that we have this update button, and the machine realized that when the loop is closed, then you push the button with 100% certainty. So this is an indication that the machine learns that, okay, the right algorithm to update is a closed loop. We also look at this value function. So value function is basically just your expected future reward. So Stage A is like generate some pattern, but these open ends are far away from each other. So it becomes a local minimum. Okay. So it get trapped there for a while, but you realize not the best policy. Okay. So it's got a very small future reward. But the machine will learn that, okay, by bringing this these two ends closer, which is in this case, this is still open loop, but bring the ends closer, get a slightly better value. So, which means that the machine learns that, okay, maybe bringing them together, there's some reward can be found. At the end, if you can go through a very complicated trajectory, but when these two ends closed, there's a big value. And this is the action the machine realized that it wants to take. Okay.
Size of the loop depends on the temperature.
Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention. This is just a zero temperature. It's a ground state operation. Right. We don't worry about the temperature here. So we argue that to propose a loop update, the machine has to learn several things. Has to learn there's an ice rule constraint, although he doesn't really know what is an ice rule constraint. And that's to build a cluster without creating a defect, which means that you need to satisfy the ice constraint. And also, the machine learns the ability to distinguish open and closed loops.
Deep question, you know, if I give like so many samples to the machine and like image of the loops, can the machine figure out whether it's a loop or not?
We tried. So basically replaying
people use that for protein folding, for example. People have used this 3D structure of the proteins and learn that proteins folding. So similar idea, I would say.
No, but here is a liberal, it's a tricky in a sense that we only want the closed loop. I think teaching a machine to what a closed loop is tricky because even if you do a convolution neural network, if you do a CNN, that means that you need a lot of global information. So we don't really provide the information of the loop to a machine. All we actually end up doing just checking the ice constraint. Yeah, we try to generate the loops. We even like played how, so we do this transfer learning. We played how the loop algorithm generates a loop, and hopefully machine will mimic it. No, it's actually hard. Okay, so I'm running out of time, so I'm just gonna show that we can basically use our trained machine to generate something very similar to what the loop algorithm generates. So these are the difference between two configurations. Okay, so you can think of this like a transfer map. I'm running out of time, but let me just not showing the videos. Okay. So we can do a comparison. If I just use this nearest neighbor policy, so I just forget about these global observations, I can still achieve something, but my total acceptance rate will be smaller than what the algorithm does. So for an ideal case, you should have 100%, but there's sometimes that the machine will the algorithm will generate a loop that's so long that we have to terminate it, and same as in this case. And we can tune this stepwise reward and just tune the loop size distribution. Again, another cool thing that we thought of is that this is a scalable in a sense that since we can only train it in some small boxes, okay? And if I want to generate update in a larger system, then naively I think that I have to just train it on a larger scale. But I realized that we can just take this box and move along with this agent, okay? And then it turns out that by doing this, the agent has enough knowledge to know what to do next. So these are some of the distributions. So this is 16 by 16, so this is what we trained. So this is what the loop distribution of this loop algorithm should look like. And it's very similar to what we call the convolution network results. And we can do a larger system size. And we can even do a even larger system size scales. So we can do crazy things. We can tune it such that explore the optimize for larger loops. And one thing we want to check is that if this is a legitimate Markov process, so that the machine doesn't really remember some of the spatial states. So we check two things. One is that we start from the same configuration and same starting point and see how fast that it relaxes. And this is the heat map for the conventional loop algorithm. And this is what the heat map for our algorithm. Okay. So it doesn't have memory effects. And we can show that our results, our algorithm is ergodic. So this is the visiting heat map. So this, we look at the how many times each site is visited. And basically, well, you'll see that that space is just flat, okay? Which means that our algorithm kind of just goes through all the sites, as in the loop conventional loop algorithm case, okay? So this looks nice, but there's a caveat. Is this a legitimate Monte Carlo update? No, because we cannot really prove that the algorithm satisfies the detail balance. Because in all this training, the only thing I know is the policy of going from one state to another state. But to get the detail balance, I also need to know the transition probability from this other state, the reverse process. And unless we train another network, there's no explicit way, at least in our training scheme, to really know how to take the inverse. I think that's a problem. But if I just look at the distribution and the ergodicity, it seems that our algorithm is doing something. Although we cannot, there seems to be some global balance, but I cannot really prove it. So one thing we're thinking is maybe we can just combine this. So this will be not a legitimate Monte Carlo update, but it's some kind of way for you to discover some using this scheme to discover some of other possible Monte Carlo updates, and then mixing with conventional algorithms or mixing with these energetic models, such that the RBM kind of models, or there's a recent proposal is along these lines, but it's sort of just you build your physics constraint in the policy, and then try to use the reinforcement learning to optimize which policy you take. Okay, so Let me just quickly summarize. So we build an interface between a machine and physical model, and based on this Markov decision process. By looking at the results, we think the machine learned ice wall and this closed loop condition. We also look at how the agent makes decision, and the only caveat is that we cannot really prove the detail balance or any balance condition. So we're currently exploring some other ways of doing this, and maybe combining with other proposals and make this a legitimate kind of way to search for a new molecular update. Okay, with this, and I thank you for your attention.
Questions? Your loop size was tuned, right? But you could also ask it to minimize the autocorrelation time or something, integrated autocorrelation time.
Yes.
And that would presumably choose a longer loops or something. Just choose some loop distribution, right?
Yeah. But I think the biggest problem is this balance condition, because I can basically do whatever I want and just ask the agent to do it. But if I don't get a balance condition, then my sampling might be biased. So I think that's the biggest problem we're facing now.
I was just wondering, have you looked into how the efficiency of your algorithm compares to the conventional cluster update schemes?
Yes, but I don't have the...
Time, like in the time it takes.
So we get a slightly better autocorrelation time. Yeah. But as I said, the original loop algorithm, so we're working on a very constrained model, and the original loop algorithm is very efficient already. So, yes. Yes. Then, yeah, I guess that will just in this graph means. Yeah, in that case means that this distribution become wider. The final temperature and that's why if we do a spin ice at high temperature, we also need this single spin flips. So like because we still have this state with defects. Yeah.
But
you haven't tried. Yeah.
3D would be just really difficult. Yeah. I haven't tried it.
No.
How the loop algorithm does in 3D?
It's still very efficient. Yeah.
It's probably hard to beat. But there might be generalized like gauge models that might be more interesting. Like what Fiala is looking at that you don't have explicit loop algorithms for or something like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Being sure you're here all week, ready to mingle. Guys, contact Inger if you want to meet with him. He's in the office right beside me. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.